Speak Out on KNTR Talk is heard on one frequency, 106.3 throughout the tri-state area. You can also listen to KNTRTalk.com and listen anywhere through the TuneIn radio app. From elected officials, community leaders, small business owners, school district representatives, and charitable causes, Speak Out is here for you on KNTR Talk 106.3. It's time to introduce you to the host of Speak Out. When Dwayne Johnson calls for a stunt double, who does The Rock turn to?
The police!
When Ham the astroturf said, no more space flights! Who did great minds at NASA turn to?
The police!
Now, this world-renowned actor slash daredevil has settled behind the microphone once again for your benefit. Ladies and gentlemen, the one and only, he's the poster child for no cloning, Paul LaVoy.
Oh my gosh, they're chair dancing already. It is Wednesday, February 3rd, 2021. Welcome to the Havasu Pioneers Radio Show, heard every first Wednesday of each month. And your host is Dan DeLosantos. Dan, you brought in a couple of nice ladies today. Why don't you go ahead and make the introductions?
Well, today we've got two very special guests with us, Paul, and I'm excited to have Dodie Hepus, and she ramrods the McCulloch reunion for the McCulloch workers. Ooh. And she's going to share a little bit of some stories with us from the past and give us a little update on what that reunion might look like. And our second guest speaker will be Hannah Rangel, and she is with the Havasu City Museum. And so she's going to be giving us some new news. She's kind of the new sheriff on the block, and or the new curator, if it will. And she's going to be sharing some really great updates that you'll be able to see here in the future with the museum.
And no stranger to Speak Out as well. Second time here. So welcome back, Hannah.
Thank you.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Thank you.
No problem. What do you want to get to first?
Well, we're going to have Dodie talk a little bit today at first. And so, Dodie, you know, you and I have talked over the last couple of years, and, you know, boy, what a challenge with the COVID, and, of course, the McCulloch reunion, which was going to be the last reunion that we were going to host, and, of course, pandemic just knocked it right out of the park. It just killed us.
Correct.
And so, you know, people are, of course, asking, boy, are we going to still have that reunion, and, you know, what's going to happen? What's the story there?
Well, because 2020 kind of put a kibosh to me and all of my people, I'm shooting for 2022. I've done it always on the even years, but 2020 was going to be the last because the people are getting elderly. But when we had our reunion, the Pioneer reunion, I stood up and said, I will do it until I can no longer do it. Because these people, you know, they deserve that. They worked in that factory for years and years, some as much as 60 years.
Man.
And they enjoy coming and visiting and talking about old days and old times. So October 2022, God willing, and the creek don't rise, we will have it again. We always have it at the Elks. It's always on a Sunday. And we will do the best we can, hopefully, with our fingers crossed.
So when these reunions take place, do people come in from out of town?
The majority of them are Havasuvians.
Okay.
They do bring in their children, maybe a cousin or an uncle might come in from another state. But the majority of them all live in Havasu.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So, you know, after all these years, you know, I mean, kind of how many people do you think we see at the reunions now?
Well, in 2006, and I don't know if you remember Patty Holly, but we were the ones who went to a Pioneer reunion and saw all of our older people because the plant closed in 1999.
Okay.
And so we went trying to figure where they all are. So in 2006, we started the reunion in October. We had over 200 people. And they were anxious because, you know, in 2000, there was nothing to do. So now here we are in 2006, and they were all eager. And we, you know, they ask questions. We have speakers. We show all of our whatever we would built at the factory, all kinds of paperwork. Mm-hmm. We all wore our shirts. Some of us wore our badges. and it was just a nice reunion.
Speaking of what you built, what were the different products that were built at that factory?
Well, most of it, the biggest thing was the chainsaws, the different size chainsaws.
McCulloch chainsaws.
Chainsaws. We did lock splitters. We did, what do you call it? Weed trimmers. So, you know, and anything that was painted on that product, I and my department, we painted that. I ran the paint department for many years.
Now, that later became Poland, right? What was the company after?
Black & Decker?
Was it Black & Decker
that
took
over? Well,
there
was a lot of them. There was a lot of them.
Okay.
There was
a few, yes.
All right.
Steel, Black & Decker.
Oh,
lot
Steel,
of them.
Right,
yeah.
Right, right.
So there was, you know, a lot of them tried to keep it going, keep it going.
Uh-huh.
And they did it as long as they could. And us people who were really dedicated, we stayed right with them.
Dan, let's put the phone number out there for people to call in if they want to. Maybe they worked in the factory, too. They could share stories or two, which we always do. So it's 854-KNTR, 854-5687 is the number if you want to call in on the Havasu Pioneers radio show. Maybe you know Doty. Who knows?
Correct. So, Doty, you know, we have a picture on our Havasu Pioneers page, and it shows Sanders on the table, and people were, you know, they were basically flat Sanders. There were all kinds of different products that you made. So the other, you know, really unique product that in Hannah is with us today, and she happened to share a couple of photographs from today's paper 50 years ago. And so it talked about the J-2.
Yes.
The helicopter. And so, you know, it said McCulloch's helicopter toy, which I thought was interesting.
And I think they also did boat motors.
Yes, McCulloch outboards, correct.
Yep, outboards. Mm-hmm.
And so there were some really great equipment that came out, a couple failures. The outboard engines, unfortunately, had a challenge. But, you know, the J-2 was actually up in the air for a number of years, but I think the strongest product, of course, was the chainsaws. And we saw those engines in go-karts a lot.
Yes.
That was the number one engine in go-karts. Yeah. People actually didn't know McCulloch for chainsaws. They knew it for the go-kart engine.
Yes.
And they would put not one but two of them on these things.
Yep.
And back in the 60s and 70s, they were getting 80 miles an hour on these things.
Yeah.
And it was just crazy fast for that time.
Absolutely.
So, you know, there were a lot of families that worked at the McCulloch factory. My mom included. I am proud to say I worked there one day. but inevitably, some of these people, as you mentioned, had been there for decades.
Many. Well, majority of them came from, you know, right from California, from the Anaheim area. And they came in the late 60s, and they opened it up. And this is what a lot of the people forget. When they look at Havasu, they think lake. Well, you know, what made that lake, you know? Mr. McCulloch. Why did Mr. McCulloch do that? Why did all these people come? Why did we all stay? Well, why not? It's an absolutely beautiful town. It's gorgeous.
Well, it's a pretty bold move to move your whole factory from California out to the middle of the desert. I'm sure some people thought he was crazy. And inevitably, there wasn't enough room for everybody to have housing at that point,
right.
Was it?
No, there was not. And the majority, I think, was Smoke Tree Ave was one of them. I'm trying to think of some of the other ones off the handle. Off my head, I can't think of any of them. But they just built these homes for these people to come. And they all did because they were dedicated to him. And they knew that. And a lot of them wanted maybe a new adventure. Why not?
You can see a lot of those homes, too, when you drive through town. You can tell because of the brick exterior.
Right.
Correct.
You know?
San Juan Apartments, of course, the homes down there on Smoke Tree.
Reese Apartments.
Swanson. No, not Swanson. Mesquite. Correct, and Smoke Tree. So, yes, some landmark properties are still here. Now, the McCulloch Hotel is no longer here, but we still have a lot of the original buildings. The courthouse is here. The building that Crazy Ed's was still here. Our theater is now Grace Arts. So, you know, there's still some amazing landmark locations around town that remind us that live here or have lived here. Wow, I remember when that was the only building on the block.
Yeah. And when we get together with our reunions, it's amazing what they talk about, what they speak about, what they reminisce, and how much we hug each other. I mean, we worked with each other for years and years, and we just loved it. And they were good people to work for.
Sure.
I can't stress that enough.
Well, McCulloch factory workers were the wireless hotline to the town's gossip. And so along with our party lines, if you worked at the plant, you pretty much knew what went on that day anywhere in town, no matter who it was.
Like going to the barber, huh?
You also needed a CB radio.
Oh, yeah.
That was one of the big ones, too.
Very true. Very true. That was our cell phones of the day.
Yep, exactly.
Dodie, I always like to ask the pioneers that were here before the bridge was built, before there was an island, if you will. It was a peninsula. What did you think once you heard the idea that Robert McCulloch was bringing in the London Bridge and was going to put it in Lake Havasu?
Well, now you got to remember, now I come from upstate New York. My doctor says, go west, young lady, and and live.
Sure.
So we just pick up, we sell, we come, we buy. Mm-hmm. And by that, but see, when we came, it was the first year anniversary of the bridge.
Oh, okay.
And you know what? Maybe I was a little naive, but trying to figure out, oh, this is a tourist town, isn't it? Isn't it? I guess it is. So, but we didn't know that at the time, you know, and it was a little difficult, you know, getting accustomed to different terrains and this and that. But we stayed.
Man, that's fantastic. You know, I have a McCulloch chainsaw, and it runs. We had the mayor cut the ribbon at the McCulloch C.V. Wood Lighthouse Memorial dedication, and we started that thing up, and it ran great. And we're crossing our fingers. He cut the ribbon, and I got to tell you, it was a moment to see him do that.
I sat in that front seat, and I'm going, come on, you. You will start. Yes, you will.
So, you know, I actually have one of the chainsaws that was, it was returned, and it was rebuilt, and there were, occasionally they would specially rebuild an engine if it came back in. So there were people that were very specialized within the plant that did their jobs. You know, so what were the different departments?
Oh, my goodness. Well, starting off with the office people, they were always there. We always had a nurse there. We had a die cast, the best die cast west of the Mississippi. We had where you might paint department. You had, test cell. That was the biggest one, is the test cell. Hmm. You had the, where you, I'm trying to think what they called it. You just put all your parts together and you just assembly, the assembly.
The assembly was
there. Then you've got the shipping area, the dock for, you know, getting all the product out.
And then you had the whole other location for the bar plant.
The bar plant was on Acoma and Industrial, I think.
And Lake Havasu Avenue.
Lake Havasu Avenue.
Right.
That's where they started, and then they just slowly moved them over to the plant.
Gotcha.
Yep.
Okay.
The bar plant. That was the bar plant.
So, you know, I guess when I think about the families coming out, and there were three shifts, by the way.
I lived on Holly Ave because my husband at that time was becoming a professional fishing guide here, and we needed someplace to put the boat and to find a home that's got a garage. Everything had carports. So we lived right on Holly Ave, block and a half from the plant, and it was a constant 24 hours. It was going, you know, there was never, maybe Sunday afternoon might have quieted it down a little bit.
So there were three nightlives for these people.
Three shifts.
So they'd get off in the morning and go to the bar. Or they'd get off at midnight and go, the bar's closed.
I'm laughing, but no, they're not closed because they didn't close till 1 o'clock.
Oh, okay, that's right.
So yeah, but back in those days, Sunday morning,
there was no liquor
sales. There was no liquor sales before noon.
Right. So we would go to, I'm trying to think of what that, Holiday Inn had Reflections.
Right.
So I worked night shift for quite a while, and come midnight, hurry.
I remember those commercials.
Yeah. So you still had a couple of hours to, or an hour or so to relax and enjoy.
And you had to come all the way into town to be able to find a bar.
Yes.
From the McCulloch plant. There was nothing on that side of town.
Yeah, exactly.
Havasu Avenue still had a section of dirt road to it. And so, you know, there was an accident one time out there where the torrential rains were so bad. I think so.
I think it was 1974. The only reason I know that is because we had all of our plans ready for July to go to upstate New York to a wedding. And my husband worked for MPI, McCulloch Properties, and the sheriff's office at the same time. And the winds were coming and the rain was coming and it was torrential. It was awful. It was the first time in my life that I actually seen a road rolled up. Wow. Cement was gone. And there was a lot of tragedy, a lot of death. Right. Not a lot of deaths, but a lot of them both.
There was a family that lost their life in the car that swept down
that truck.
Yes. Oh, and then the truck.
Is this the big flood we've talked about?
Yes, the 100-year storm, the flood.
Yes.
And it would never stop. It would just kept going and going. But that one accident, I think it was on the south end of town on one of those washes. Mm-hmm. It was a father, mother, and a son.
Yes.
And just a son survived.
Right.
And it you saw a lot of it out there. And that water didn't care where it was going. It went everywhere.
Well, Paul, it's time for a break, I believe, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely.
So, yeah, we have Dodie with us from the McCulloch plant, and we have Hannah from the Lake Havasu City Museum of History. So we'll be right back.
Right. And the Havasu Pioneers Radio Show brought to you by Mercury Air Conditioning and Heating. Right here on 106.3, the Voice of the Free. I'm Paul Lavoie. Speak Out will continue in a moment with the Havasu Pioneers Radio Show. All right, Speak Out, brought to you in part by Mojave Mortgage, also Bradley Chevrolet and Bradley Ford, GDK CPA LLC, Horizon Community Bank, Springbrook McAndrew Financial Services, Patio Paradise, Connected Computer and Technology, and the Havasu Pioneers Radio Show, brought to you by Mercury Air Conditioning and Heating.
So proud.
Gotta love those guys at Mercury, you know, that really a great air conditioning company. Keep an eye out for those folks, that company they're on, Country Shire, and they do amazing work. So we're with Dodie Hepus, and so she is telling us some great history about the McCulloch factory, early years in Lake Havasu City, and her own experiences moving to Lake Havasu. So Dodie, when you got here, you mentioned, you know, you didn't have work.
Well, you know what? We flew in with the McCulloch flight. So my doctor found this little ad in the paper and said, give it a whirl. It's going to cost you nothing but a flight over. So we took the flight over. Well, we're fishermen and boaters, so what's the first thing you see is the lake. Yay. But, but you know, that was okay. But now we've got to go home and sell, and now we're going to come in. Well, when you fly in, it's one thing. When you drive in, it's another. So when we were driving, excuse what I'm saying, but I thought it doesn't exist. Because we drove and we drove and we drove and we drove. And I'm thinking, okay, well, there it is. There up popped the lake. And I said, we're here. But now what? No friends, no family, no job, no place to live.
Wow.
Ouch. Now I'm a pioneer without a wagon. It's just a car. But it does its thing. And now here we are. We stopped at a gas station and say, we're looking for this place. Well, that's in Parker. I don't want to live in Parker. I want to live here. Well, then we find a place. Mrs. Bodening gave us their little converted garage. We stayed there. My friend's mother and father, Mr. and Mrs. Duck, gave us their house for 2 weeks. We found that. Then we found the house on Sunflower. Now what? Now what?
Wow.
Now what do we do? Now we got to get a job. My husband started out at the Havasu Hotel. I started doing taking in laundry and cleaning homes.
Man, what an amazing story.
And it's just, and it all was happy ever after because I said we would give it a year. Right. Give it a year. After that, we go somewhere else.
Well, so we have a caller, right?
Oh, caller, you're live on Speak Out.
Hi, my question is for Dodie. Running the paint shop, there were a lot of environmental concerns creeping up on that end of the businesses that I'm aware of. I'm just wondering, do you see that as one of the reasons why McCulloch was probably driven out of business because of the high cost of doing business? I'll listen off the air for your answers.
That's a great question.
No, I don't. To myself, I don't think it was that.
Emissions were part of it with the chainsaw.
Yeah, that's correct. But a lot of our stuff that was manufactured was down in Mexico. So a lot of that stuff was sent to Mexico to be assembled. A lot of it came back to be reassembled and put together. Now, I'm not saying that what made it, the 1982s was tough. It was a bad year. Everybody was having a hard time getting all their businesses together. And I don't know if there was actually one thing that made it go bad. I couldn't give you a definite answer that this was it. this was it. The manufacturer of the product, I think in my estimation, was perfect. It was okay.
Sure.
It did its job. It did its thing. We all did our job. What did? I think maybe the economy had a little bit to do with it.
Sure.
I don't know.
Well, Paul had a really good question. What was your first summer like?
Our first summer, okay, we came in 72. Of course, we kind of just slithered into that warm weather.
So what month did you drive in?
We came in September.
Oh, okay.
So
it was still pretty warm.
It was still 112.
Sure.
But, it, you know, you're in an air-conditioning car. Now you're too worried about trying to find things, so you're not really paying attention. And then the winters came, and it was fine. Summer, it was a little challenge. just a little challenge to get used to it and to remember, make sure you drink water.
Yes.
That was the biggest mistake. A lot of us who come forget about that drinking. But it was a little warm, and my children never complained. That was one nice thing in my favor. They just went with it.
That's wonderful. Well, Dodie, I can't thank you enough for being on the show today. You know, you're very inspiring because you've been here all these years. And to be able to have something to look forward to with the reunion in 2022, how exciting that's got to be for the McCulloch workers. And, you know, we really want to show the appreciation for those workers during this October's dedication of the 50 years of Lake Havasu City's London Bridge. So, again, thank you so much for being with us.
I'll be here come September, 49 years.
49 years.
Wow. I'm very proud of
the bridge is 50, and she's been here 49
That's
years.
Right. She's younger of the two.
I'm the younger of the bridge. Thank you for having me.
Excellent. Very nice to meet you. And we're going to take a short break now. And, of course, Havasu Pioneers brought to you by Mercury Air Conditioning and Heating. We'll return in a moment. Myself, Paul Lavoie, Dan De Los Santos, our host, and we'll have Hannah Rangel, Executive Director of the Lake Havasu Museum of History. Dan says it one way, I say it another. Did I say it right, Hannah?
You did.
All right, perfect. Back with more in a moment. Stay with us.
A chainsaw.
Uh-oh, somebody must have left it.
Probably taking a coffee break.
It's a McCulloch Mag 110.
Wow.
It's got automatic oiling.
That's slick.
This here's the chain brake safety feature.
Yeah.
Stops the chain in less than a tenth of a second.
That's fast.
Can you believe it cost only $89.95?
That is a good deal.
Mm-hmm.
McCulloch, the lowest price chainsaw with chain brake. Only $89.95.
That McCulloch's got just about everything.
Yeah, but I bet it can't swim. Good point.
McCulloch, in the yellow pages, under sauce.
What do you think, Dan?
God.
Oh, I love that commercial.
Awesome.
Is that
awesome.
A walk down memory lane or what?
Yes,
and
it was.
I remember seeing that commercial.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
oh,
very
famous.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we're going into our second half of the hour, and fortunately, we have the new curator of Lake Havasu City Museum of History, and that's Hannah Rangel. And Hannah, you know, I want to thank you for being on the show today because you've got some exciting news to share with us. And you know, certainly great thanks to our past curators over the years, but I understand you're going to be really breaking some ground and making some changes for us.
I hope so.
So, you know, you got here in Lake Havasu City, and, you know, you're just still finding out a little bit about the history. And, boy, you know, you went in and you looked in the back, and there's so much to go through, all those items that need to be cataloged and you're looking at doing some changes with the museum, and I understand you're even considering a new location in the future. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, I would say one of the major successes that I found in the city is that everyone involved, and I was so pleased to be here and hear Tony talk too about the chainsaws, gave me some extra information, because I think we have about 7 chainsaws, but they're not on display. So that's really what I'm finding is that our collections has kind of outgrown our museum display area. And it's really about having these programs and displays accessible to the public. It's really what a museum is supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would say that everyone before me, museum staff, volunteers, people in the community, everybody who has been committed to preserving the history of Lake Havasu City has done a good job in saving things, memorabilia, magazines, newspapers,
pictures.
Chainsaws. I didn't have that commercial, though. I'm going to get it. the chainsaws, the motors. You know, we have the original J2, which is amazing for the city. And so, but, you know, we don't, you know, you don't even have access to the J2 unless it's, you know, you're going to be a VIP and we make arrangements for it.
Or, if it's, just, or if it's in the parade.
Right. But wouldn't it be a beautiful thing to have these things more on display? Like, I would love, like, when she was sitting here talking, I just thought to myself, like, I would love to have more access to all the construction workers in the factory, to have a bigger display case on actually the all of the construction that goes into the things that built this city, the engineering, the architectural plans. I mean, we literally have each architectural plan for the housing developments that were first initiated here. I posted one yesterday on our social media just because I was jealous that there was a house for sale for
$30,000.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Like,
oh, man.
So, Hannah, you know, one of the things that being here all these years, I'm always surprised that when I talk to people that I've known for many years, 20, 30 years, and they not only, one either didn't know we had a museum, or if they did, they've never been there, they don't know where it's at. What's your response to that going forward? How are we going to fix that?
That just amazes
me.
Well,
I would say that one of the things that I've noticed in this community, and I'm new, so I'm always up to hear everyone's experiences, because I just moved here last August from San Diego. And I've traveled around quite extensively for my museum exhibits. And one of the things that I've gathered is the way the town has kind of evolved also and changed over the years and also stayed the same is that there seems to be a little bit of a gap lately that I'm hearing from a lot of other institutions as well. There is a huge amount of nonprofits and arts and the, you know, the pioneers that do the walkway and Doty's that I'm just learning about. And there's all these programs, right? But it's also, I think a lot of the program managers and people are saying, how do we get the kids interested? The kids have to come in and take over where the generations have left off in preserving history, arts, culture, everything that makes Lake Havasu, Lake Havasu. I mean, we need to preserve the history of fishing, of outboards, you know, of championship skiing that was here. I'm learning all these new sportsmen things I know nothing about, okay? I didn't even know what a motorized vehicle was.
So you come with a pretty extensive background. Give us a little quick bullet point about where you come from in this industry.
Basically, I came into the museum accidentally during college as a work-study program, and I just said, wow, these people are so smart. I want to be smart just like them. and I don't know that I'm quite there yet, but I started in education in the museums, and then from there I developed a knack for exhibit development and design. So I have been designing things for 25 years. And implementing traveling exhibits. So I've done exhibits like the Berenstain Bears for the Berenstain Bears authors, and that traveled for about 7 years. I've worked on mammoths and mastodons with the Field Museum. I built Beerology, which is still currently on display in the Museum of Man in San Diego, California. I also helped facilitate the move of the King Tut exhibit from Luxor into the Las Vegas Natural History Museum. And so I have, like, a very extensive background in actually building exhibitions.
Hannah, you also have a background with the Discovery Museum in Vegas, correct?
Yeah.
Is that where you get the tie-in with the kids in Havasu and preserving that history?
Yeah, actually, something really personal that I fell in love with is the Children's Museum is where I got my start. They took me in as a work study, and I worked there for over 5 years. And I probably wouldn't have left, but until the SpaceX and Bigelow Aerospace had contacted me, and that was kind of like the start of their new little privatization of space. They wanted to build a museum exhibit. That's why I left. But one of the key factors that I loved, even though I was working in education and exhibit development, is that we had an at-risk kids program. So it's also how I learned to facilitate programs and inspire kids to get into fields that they may not necessarily think of.
Sure.
You know, we all want to be a firefighter. We don't all want to be a curator, an anthropologist, an archaeologist, or have history majors, you know, things like that. But during my time with the museum, they had this at-risk program with a manager who employed the children from 10 years old to 18 to show them how to work in a museum, how to have a job, job school, job skills,
sure.
college development. They went to college summits. And fortunately, I met a really beautiful young lady named Luth Maria, and she was 14 years old, and she needed a home. And so, wow, so long ago, because she's like 30 now.
Oh, my goodness.
But I adopted her.
Oh, how neat.
And it was the second adoption that went through from our at-risk program. Our executive director, Suzanne, adopted a young lady named Tara out of the program as well.
Okay.
So wow. That was kind of like my experience with learning about the youth.
So that is the Discovery Children's Museum is a very interactive facility as well. It's very hands-on. Mm-hmm. Are you planning that for the Lake Havasu Museum as well?
Yeah, just like in any industry, you know, times change.
Yes.
Not only with technology, but opinions, perspectives. So back in the day, you'd go to the New York Natural History Museum, which I loved, and you'd see taxidermy dioramas, you know, and then there became a time where taxidermy wasn't quite as popular. So they came out of it, and then it became more of the foam insulation was really easy to work with when we were building, you know, animals and making them create real. But then it kind of moved into a generation of, you know, an immersive environment like Disneyland. You walk into the Pirates of the Caribbean, you feel like you're in that environment. It transforms you and your imagination.
Sure.
And then museums started to transfer over. Well, children's museums were always interactive, but maybe a natural history museum wasn't. But they discovered within interaction, the more that you touch, you know, when we're talking about even the London Bridge, mm-hmm. right, you can read about how the London Bridge is built. Or if you were building a Lego set of the London Bridge, a 5-year-old is getting something out of that just as much as a 13-year-old that's reading how the bricks were numbered and put together and what it took for that development or work. So there's a lot of learning without telling your child that he's learning in play, and that's where the interactive exhibits have come. And so the future of museums really is immersive environments and hands-on activities.
Dan, I want to go play with Legos at the museum now.
Me too.
That would be fun.
So, you know, when
even for adults.
When I think of
just
the
$2,000 and I'll build it for you.
Oh,
when I think of the Lake Havasu City Museum and I look at all the history we have, and of course it's our 50-year anniversary of the London Bridge, mm-hmm. can we expect the Havasu Museum to play a role in this October's dedication and during the 4-week of celebration?
Oh, absolutely. And as a matter of fact, it really kind of prompted a little bit of we're closed, you know, we started closing, number one, because of the pandemic was getting a little bit concerning, but we just decided while we're closed, we're still running operations, this is a very good time to clean our collections, re-inventory, recatalog, and maybe do a little bit of restoration. So currently in our space, even though we can't do the whole $1 million project I want to do with hands-on activities or moving a building, we can restore a little bit and add. We have a lot of extra collections that we would love to put out on display. So while we're doing that, we're participating in the 50th anniversary for the city, we've done a lot of extensive research, and we found huge schedules and newspaper articles down to what everyone was doing, what merchants were planning, what decorations they put in their stores in September to get ready mm-hmm. for the dedication of the bridge. What the Chimawavies did, the boat races, soapbox. There was soapbox derbies.
Yeah, sure.
That looked, I really want a soapbox derby, honestly. I think it's cute. They had outboard racing towards the end, which you guys have done a lot of. And they also had the costume contest, which we have all of the costumes from the previous costume contests. So everyone in town, including a bank, kind of like went into a contest that the Herald hosted where there was $7,000 worth of prizes. Everybody had a costume in town. So everybody in the bank, in the store, everywhere you went was dressed up thematically for the dedication, ready to go.
50 years ago today, actually, there was an ad in the Herald about $7,000 worth of prizes.
Yes.
And they were putting up, and of course there were the rules there that we want to read. And, of course, I'm reaching out to Brandon over at the Herald and asking, hey, are you going to be doing something like that again for this year's dedication? So, you know, we probably should take a moment and share the address for those of you who have never been to the museum. It's at 320 London Bridge Road, Lake Havasu City, Arizona, 86403. If you haven't been to the museum, I got to tell you, look at the times and dates that they're open. You want to get in there, meet Hannah. And, you know, if you've got that piece of memorabilia that you just, you know, you've been holding on to, she's the gal to give it to you, to give it to and have her evaluate it and see if it fits the museum's needs. So, you know, I guess the thing that also comes to mind, you know, as we look at the museum and we look at all the history, and we look at the size of the museum. Now, there's so many exhibits that currently you can't display. Is there a possibility that in the interim of the Big Million Dollar Project that you'll transition some things out and bring some other ones in so there's a reason to come back to the museum periodically?
It's really what we would like to do. And, you know, besides having traveling exhibits that are something, you know, quite new to the museum, they had a lot of success with the last exhibit, Water Waste. Mm-hmm. It was really good for them.
Sure.
Everyone seems to enjoy it. Is that even as a resident, if you come once and you've traveled around the museum, you're not going to come back every weekend. But in order to be a member and really benefit from the museum, it's about having constant programs and a change out in exhibits. So right now, we can do a little bit of that while we move around our space in our current location. But what we really need is probably twice the amount of square footage than we have, if not three times, to be able to display all of the things. We have a lot more to offer at Site 6. We have a ton of different radios and the CB radios that were donated antiques. We have tons of fishing memorabilia. Geology is one. We have more Native American, and not just necessarily Chemehuevi, but because of the influx in Apache and Navajo in the Crit area, we have a lot of the different tribal jewelries and things like that to display. So there's so much more we could do and be changing out, but the space, it kind of prohibits us from doing that.
Sure. What's it cost to go to the museum?
It's $7.
Okay. And now you mentioned an annual membership. What do those run?
And so a family membership is $40, and then it goes up from there. Right now we're extending the membership, so it's more than a year because we were closed for COVID. So you're looking at 15 months for a membership, but then you get membership perks. You get guest passes if you have family in, so you can attend programs. And then depending on your level, you'll get VIP tickets to our annual gala, some of the different parties that we're going to host, and also discount in our gift shop.
Wonderful. Wow, that's just, I'm excited that you're here because, I'm really hoping that we can start pushing the museum out into the public's eye, make sure that they know that one, we have it, two, it's there to see, and boy, some of the great things that you'll see by visiting the museum.
So, Hannah, without naming any specific locations, as in buildings, is there any particular area of town that you would like to relocate to, or areas, if you were to name, like, the top three areas of town that you would like to see the museum in?
Well, this is my first kind of smaller area that I've ever lived in.
But there are areas.
Has a lot of benefits.
Yes.
So far, I think from where we're at, the London Bridge Plaza is excellent for many reasons, including parking. So as far as where I'd like to be, it would be either more towards the visitor center or McCullough. It seems like that's where things are happening at.
Uh-huh.
A lot of car shows, a lot of foot traffic. And of course, like anybody who owns a business knows, the longer someone stays on that block or in that area, the better off the businesses are. And I think that in time, my vision really for this particular city is that we really do have a lot of arts and culture here. Even down from going to the Christmas shows where I got handmade ornaments that ladies were making or quilts. There is a huge arts and culture, and I would love to see us all in one area, kind of like mirroring the economic developments, is it called co-op space that they were building?
Oh, the F-106, yeah.
Right. Sure. So they're building those spaces, and they're successful for kind of what they're doing and comprehensively everyone coming together. I would love to see an area kind of like the original development of the downtown Phoenix area where they kind of built an area. And they had the Heard Museum, and then other museums came. So we are the only museum in town. There's no zoo. There's no other of those kind of things. There's no other place to go learn about natural history besides, like, Parks and Recs. Mm-hmm. So I would love to see that we're all collaborating together, and that maybe we offer offices and a museum and an arts and culture center all in one area, if we can figure out what that best area
is. You're kind of describing the Smith Center and the Discovery Museum, that whole area right there, too.
Right. It's great to have a hub like that, but you want to have it also where the visitors have access to do things when they want to come out of the water. They want to do things like they want to go eat, they want to go shop, they want to go antique shopping, see a museum, get the history, stay in one particular area.
Get the visitor buy-in on the history of the town also.
Does spring break count as a zoo?
I work that.
Dodie, you seem to have some feelings about what Hannah was talking about. What are your thoughts?
I would like to see it expand, because we brought in a lot of stuff for the museum. I wished it was bigger. I'm thinking the center of McCullough would have been the ideal big place. You got that big, don't want to say, but that big Kmart area that was there, all those buildings, that would have been an ideal place. But, you know, I enjoy what you're doing, and maybe I will come and bring my application from that docent that's been sitting in my drawer for so long.
I would love that. Actually, the more the merrier, you know what I mean? And also, I loved meeting you and hearing your stories today, because that's what drives me and makes me more passionate to do what I'm doing. It's good history.
Right.
Oh, yeah, I have trivia.
Oh, okay.
Hey, you know what? I have an idea.
But it has trivia.
Oh, it does. Okay. Well, you know, we're getting ready to wrap our show up. But, you know, to expand on the changes that Hannah's making. Hannah, you got an offer to make our listeners today.
Yeah. So I'm going to give free passes to the museum, two free passes for our opening. We're hoping to reopen around March. But I want to know the name of the first TV news pilot reporter that was driving RJ2 in Lake Havasu City. So I need his name.
So if we have a caller that has the answer to that, call into the station, and if you answer it correctly, you've got two free passes to the Lake Havasu City Museum.
854-KNTR, 854-5687. And I guess you could Google that as well.
You probably could, but you've got only minutes left.
Right.
So, Hannah, I'd like to have you back on the show periodically through the year and give us some updates about what's happening with the museum, where you're going to be, maybe new groups or events that you're going to be partnering with, so that people have an idea about how you're exploding the museum into the public's eye.
I would love to.
That would be great.
Thank you. That's
cool. You want to take a break?
Sure, let's take a break.
We'll come back and talk about, we got a phone call.
There it is.
This is going to be interesting.
Yep.
Caller, you're live on Speak Out.
Can you tell me the question again?
Okay, so what was the name of the original TV news pilot reporter that was flying our own J2 in Lake Havasu City? He reported a little bit of the traffic in Lake Havasu, which you don't imagine much, and the weather.
Oh, I don't know it.
Darn.
I don't know it. I thought when I was working and I heard you saying it, and I'm like, I probably know this. But I don't know it. Sorry.
All right. Thank you.
Okay.
So, like a Jeopardy category, Havasu history for 1,000, Hannah. Right?
Yeah.
Perfect. All right. Let's go ahead and take a short break. And we'll come back, talk about the Facebook page, too.
Yes.
The Havasu Pioneers Facebook page. All right. Back with more in a moment. I'm Paul Lavoie. And the Havasu Pioneers radio show brought to you by Mercury Air Conditioning and Heating. Stay with us. We'll be right back. All right, we're back on the Havasu Pioneers radio show, and I'm with Dan DeLosantos, and we have a last-minute phone call. Caller, we're under 2 minutes.
Did you get an answer yet?
Not yet.
Was it Walt Johnson?
Nah, you thought it was him too,
I did
Dave.
Too. I thought
or
it was
Dan.
Walt.
Yeah.
Walt didn't know how to fly an aircraft.
No, that's incorrect. Okay. Thank you, though.
Okay, thank you.
So, you know, I want to thank you so much, Hannah, for being here. Dodie, you too. To our listeners, I wanted to give you a quick update. Owners of the Dixie Belle, they are literally waiting by the phone as we speak for the date that's going to be provided to put the Dixie Belle in the water. It is tentatively between the 25th of February and the 1st of March. That is not set in stone yet. So go on to Havasu Pioneers Facebook page to look for the updates. We'll let you know when you're going to be able to see it roll down to the water. It's going to be a big deal. The block will be lined with people and cameras, and it's going to be a momentous day.
Just a thought, Dodie, it might be a good place for the reunion next year.
Oh, on the boat.
The boat.
I'm looking at 100 people.
Oh, okay.
Oh, no. We started out with 200 and something, and as we go every other year, we've dropped down 50 to 80 people. So in 2018, we had 112 people.
Ooh, well, you know the boat holds 100 people.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. It's
bigger and better.
Yeah, right. We can have you gentlemen out there to do some talking.
So, we can do that.
So on our next show, look for some updates. We'll be looking to see what the Herald had printed and what was going on in the month of February for this 50th year of the London Bridge. And we'll be looking at, you know, the stories that led up to our dedication. So we'll have some new guest speakers. We'll have some new updates. And we'll look forward to hearing from you.